We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Will Gottlieb decided to get himself right into the middle of the conversation today. He writes for Bleacher Report, and he came out strong, saying that Steph Curry is the best player in the NBA. There, I said it. Bold words, which we're always willing to talk about here in the Bay Area. We're, of course, the flagship home of the Golden State Warriors, and we're very happy to welcome Will Gottlieb from Bleacher Report to Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. Will, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So I will tell you that a lot of these interviews that you might do about your article are going to be confrontational. You are at least in amongst a friendly Steph Curry crowd, if you're ever going to find one. No one here is a bad thing to say about Steph Curry. I don't know if even we'll meet you as best player in the NBA, but boy, he has changed the game, I think, more than any other player in the NBA. For those who haven't read your article, give us the crux of it, please.
Sure, and yeah, I certainly wouldn't fault you or anyone for not necessarily putting him at the very top. For me, the thing is kind of, why do we conflate talent with impact, and why is impact not as important? When you look at some of the guys around the league, any of the top players makes as big of an impact on winning as Steph. And to me, that is a really important skill, and probably the most important skill that we have in the game today, whether it's LeBron's playmaking, or Giannis's ability to get at the basket. I don't think anything comes close to what Steph does to make everybody around him better. And I think that's really what's allowed this whole Warriors dynasty to function. And for some reason, I think the Warriors' success kind of gets in the way of people really appreciating how good Steph is.
That said, how did you figure out what you valued in terms of impact? Because at some point, if you're going to do what is essentially a ranking, even though you didn't mention any other names, how did you determine, a way to measure impact other than just sort of an eyeball test? Or did I miss something in the reading?
So just to put it into context, over at Bleacher Report, we did a top 100 players ranking last week. And because Steph didn't play very many games, I think he played like 5 or 6 games last year, he was left off the list. And so it just kind of got me thinking, where would he belong in a world where going into maybe next season, or had he played this year? And I think you're kind of spot on there, is that I think it's very hard to measure because we don't really have a way to quantify all the things that he does. You look at the way that he creates shots for people without needing to touch the ball, without giving them a pass directly. And I think that kind of bears out in some of the on-off plus-minus splits, and certainly in some of these PIPM, BPM, whatever the ESPN one, I can't remember the name of off the top of my head. But all of these metrics that kind of measure what impact means rate Steph really highly. And I still don't think they fully capture everything that he does. But I think you're totally right that it is really hard to measure. And it is a subjective and kind of philosophical thing almost, where, it really has more to do with watching how other guys get shots because the attention that Steph draws.
In your mind, is that strictly a product of the three-pointer? Because, I mean, certainly guys like Giannis or LeBron demand a ton of attention from defenses, and you would think also get other guys open shots. Does Steph's extended range make all the difference here?
I think that's a big part of it. You look at kind of how teams load up on him, trying to force him to the basket. But, I think a lot of it is just how the way the Warriors play with him off the ball. And the fear of him maybe touching the ball or getting the ball where he can get a three opens up all these scoring lanes. Absolutely, the three-point shooting is kind of the crux of it all. But I think it's just the way that fear that he instills in the defense, the chaos that he causes. It's a lot of the buzzwords that you'll hear Kerr talking about. I think it's just like this playmaking comes in a different form that we haven't really seen before, where it's not, LeBron passing a guy open in the corner or, Giannis commanding the entire defense to wall off the paint where he can kick it out. It's a completely different thing, and we just haven't really seen that before, and so we don't really know how to quantify it or measure it or really even talk about it that well.
I'm not making an argument one way or the other, but I have been curious at hearing you talk about that. I think that's exactly what does happen, but is it possible that he maybe has the fear of that three because of what it looks like and because he's Steph Curry and sort of the beginning of a lot of this stuff? Is the fear maybe overblown at this point?
In terms of, because you look at the way teams defend Kyle Korver or, some of the other, even Clay to an extent, none of those guys command the same amount of attention. And I think, Steph does cause a lot of fear, but he's been playing at this level for 5-6 years now, and teams still have not figured out how to deal with it. And so I think, we've discussed the fear over and over again, but because there's really no answer for it, I don't think it's really overblown.
Will Gottlieb, but the Bleacher Report here on 95.7 The Game. You mentioned the word gravity, and there's no doubt that Curry's pulls defenders away from other shooters, and that just makes everyone's job a little bit easier because you have to have at least a corner of your eye on wherever Steph Curry may be, because he can basically score from anywhere that isn't the half court line, and he might try that too. So I thought the most interesting thing that you brought up, the best sentence, if you will, of your article was, Curry isn't the greatest floor raiser of all time. You replace him with LeBron James on the 2007 Cavaliers, and that's probably not a team in the NBA Finals. But he's the greatest ceiling raiser. I thought that was really well said, and for those who don't get it, please explain.
Sure, yeah, and thank you for reading that out. But basically, I think when Kevin Durant came over to the Warriors, a lot of the accolades and success that Steph was having kind of got diminished a little bit because he had all this talent around him. And my point is sort of this, that he is the one that makes everything possible. So the talent around him is fantastic, but the Warriors still really struggled to score when Steph was off the court and KD, Draymond, and Clay were all on the court. I think there's something about the way that kind of, like I said, he creates fear. He creates just an uncertainty. He puts the defense on edge in a way that just opens everything up. And so he maximizes everybody else's skill sets more than just a little bit. I mean, I think he's the greatest ceiling raiser of all time. I think that's why you go from a team with KD, Clay, and Draymond, who's, that's probably competing for a championship, but you put Steph on there and all of a sudden it's one of the greatest teams of all time. And there's only one or two in that debate. So to go from good to great, from great to elite and elite to best of all time, I think every step up is exponentially harder to reach. And that's why I think, being a ceiling raiser is more important than being a floor raiser.
Will Gottlieb, Bleacher Report. Good stuff, man. Certainly gave us a little break from all of our COVID worry to just talk about a player we enjoy so much. We can't wait till we get to see him once again on the basketball court. Before we say goodbye, let me just ask you what your initial impressions are of the NBA's bubble going on down in Orlando.
I'm a little nervous and skeptical. You're seeing guys getting sick. You're seeing guys breaking the quarantine. I think once it all starts, it'll probably settle down a little bit, but off to a shaky start, I would say. But like you mentioned, just it's going to be great to have some basketball again to get our mind off of everything else that's been going on.
Will, thanks a lot, man. Stay safe and sound.
You too. Anytime.
Thank you very much. Will Gottlieb, Bleacher Report. Just a little love for Steph Curry. Sure. It had been too long since we've had any of that here. First name Stephen, last name Curry. If the studio wanted to pop that at some point today, it would be a welcome addition to the program. Let's see. We got much more coming up this half hour. Ooh, how about this? In 20 minutes from right now, we will get into number seven, your number seven in the Bay Area's top 10, all-time top 10. Your number seven to be revealed. We'll catch you up on 10, 9, and 8. In case you haven't been scoring along at home, we'll let you know who that is as soon as we come on back here, and maybe even a little bit more glory for Steph Curry. Why not? He's a good guy. He deserves it. And it's been a long time, man. If anything, when Warriors basketball comes back, I hope we start appreciating it again.
First name Stephen, there it is. Last name Curry. He came into my life. Now everything is less blurry. Oh, Steph Curry.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ray, for playing that. I know that was Ray Ratto playing that from his home. That's his ringtone.
Ray loves sound bites.
Really love sound bites.
I hate the two of you.
Thank you. 888-957-9570 is the number. We will announce number seven at 3:30. JB, Jim Barnett, since we got a little Warriors in the air today, we're going to talk to him this afternoon. We're looking forward to that. He joins us at 3:45, as a matter of fact. So Jim Barnett, going to stop on by today. We're looking forward to that, and we're looking forward to talking to you. 888-957-9570. We're brought to you by Chilton Auto Body, open to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options along with free pickup and delivery. Chilton Auto Body now offers virtual estimates, curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your own vehicle. Book an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
How about this? A little factoid from Elias Sports Bureau. 50 years ago tonight, Carl Yastrzemski had 4 hits in the All-Star game, was named MVP of that game. No player has had 4 hits in an All-Star game since then. Are you excited about Yastrzemski's? If you're a Giants fan, you better be. Yes. We'll have a little bit more about what to be excited about Giants baseball. Tonight, by the way, would have been the All-Star game at Dodger Stadium if we were having a normal baseball season. So it's too bad the Midsummer Classic ain't there this year. We'll see if we even get any sort of baseball season. I know that all systems are pointing towards 9 days from now, we're going to be pitching. We'll see if we actually get there. Fingers crossed, maybe. I don't even know if I'm rooting for it. I don't think it's the safest thing to do, but what the hell ever. Safety, man, obviously isn't a part of it, right? So
how before... many times, though, 9 days away, how many times would you have been able to say that? Like, we're so close, and yet it feels like so much could happen between now and opening day.
Oh, yeah. It's might as well be 9 months still. There's so much happening. Before we get you to 3:30, when we were going to announce number seven here on the all-time Bay Area top 10, as voted on by you, our good listeners, let's recap. At number 10, you had Madison Bumgarner. At number 9, Steve Young. This morning, Jolo and Dibs revealed number 8, and number 8 is Ronnie Lott. Not going to argue with that. No argument to be made. One of the great defensive players ever. Dominated as a corner, moved to safety, and was maybe even better. So, I mean, he is a unique winner to himself who is willing to cut fingers off to stay on the field. You got to respect that all day and night long. Ronnie Lott coming in at number 8. We will have number 7 for you at the bottom of the hour.
Can I dig in on Ronnie Lott a little bit? Because it's really, I mean, look, Ronnie Lott's last year as a Niner was 1990. I was 9 years old and in Chicago. So I don't have – he wasn't on my list primarily because he doesn't stick out to me the way some of the other guys did. And I think that may be where my not growing up in the Bay Area and being a little young hurt me on this. So I'm curious, where does Ronnie Lott rank for you guys like all-time defensive backs? I mean, are we talking one of the top one, two, three defensive backs of all time? How good was Ronnie Lott?
I'll defer to Ray on this one since he was here to cover it. I got memories, but he's got like in-person memories.
I don't think he was as good as Darryl Green. He was a different kind of player because he was, as the highlight said, he was a hybrid. He was cornerback, safety. And back then, there were guys who could do that. Now, I don't know that anybody can because the skill demands are so much different. I don't know that he was a better cornerback than Willie Brown. He probably was one of the top five safeties of all time. But I don't know that he was one of the top five cornerbacks of all time. And cornerbacks, and part of this is unfair because cornerbacks can't use their hands the way they used to. And Ronnie Lott was very much not just a hitting guy, but a strength guy, that he would get into you and stay into you, and you could check, you know, away outside the five-yard area. So I think in some ways he suffers from against contemporaries because – but I would say comfortably top five safety, top 10 to 15 cornerback.
He's on the list. Again, corner's tough. How about this? If you needed the hardest hitting corner in football history to be one of your two starting cornerbacks, maybe Ronnie Lott gets a start at corner. If you're looking for hard-hitting safety, you can definitely start Ronnie Lott at safety and win that argument. To me, it's like him. I think the best modern safety might have been Troy Polamalu, who was just all day and night long special. Troy Polamalu.
Ah, Ed Reed, right?
Ed Reed, of course. Ed Reed, again, you know, did Ed Reed play corner before he moved, or was he always a safety?
I think he was always a safety, but I'm not positive.
Might have always been a safety. Obviously, Sean Taylor, deceased Sean Taylor, who played for Washington, was a real, real stud impact player at a position which is devalued over and over and over again in this league, and it's hard to figure out why because it's the safety valve. The word safety is in the damn position's name of every single defense. So Lott comes in at 8, an all-timer, one of the greatest to ever play for the 49ers for sure, and he wouldn't be far away from the list of greatest safeties of all time. Corners, I don't know if he's got the foot speed to do that, but if you wanted a thumper, you couldn't do any worse. You couldn't do much better, I should say, than Ronnie Lott. Before we get to the announcement in 7 minutes as to who number 7 is, just a little bit more time with Steph Curry. Because we were talking about him. We were making sweet, sweet love to our memories of Steph Curry being out on the basketball court. We hardly got to see it at all this year. When he does play again, it will be fascinating. And in terms of him being the best player in the NBA, physical specimen, defender, no and no. Offensive threat and true rally the troops around him type of leader. I don't know if there's ever been as much skill to as little ego ratio in a sports MVP. Steph Curry is a magnet to other free agents in a way that no one was ever a magnet. Andre Iguodala came to play with him. Kevin Durant came to play with him. I mean, that is the ultimate endorsement of a man's gravitational pull. Forget what he does in terms of clearing out the floor. He pulled the biggest free agent signing, one of them, in NBA history to the Bay Area when Kevin Durant knew it wouldn't be good for his reputation, but he still couldn't say no to Curry in the moment. No one else could do that. No one.
Yeah, I think Curry's greatness, I mean, just enduring greatness, above and beyond the fact that he was a great shooter, is that he thrived in an ensemble, in that he could make sure not only that he got his, but that everybody else got theirs. And the problem with basketball, when you start comparing players, is that you have to confront that philosophical argument first, which is, are you the best guy for the players around you and them for you, or are you the best individual talent? Because based on the numbers, in the last 3 years, James Harden has been a better individual player than anybody else. And I know everybody hates that answer, but the numbers bear it out. And in a sport that not only fights individual versus team, but numbers versus feel, Harden is going to end up being an incredibly reviled yet underrated player because of that. Curry is different than almost all the others. I cannot think of any other great player, and this includes Bill Russell, who made his teammates better and played in such a way that they could make him better too. Because don't forget that of all the things Curry do, defend is not one of them. But when Klay Thompson came to the Warriors and basically sort of deferred some of his ego to become a dramatically very good defender, it made Curry's life easier, and Curry benefited from that. And that's the thing about the Warriors in general, is as an ensemble, they might be the best team in NBA history. But in terms of individuals, I don't know that Curry at any moment was the best player in basketball. I don't know that he ever would have been, you know, 20 years ago. But as part of a greater whole, you'd have a hard time finding somebody better.
And I think the one thing maybe Ray left out there is that the whole is not just something he's a part of, but that both his greatness and the lack of ego create the environment for that whole to thrive. Like, you can't have the sort of cohesive, everyone's making each other better type of team if you don't have the right kind of superstar. And quite frankly, if Kevin Durant was the superstar without Steph Curry, I don't think it would have been the same. And I like Kevin Durant, and I have no problem with anything he did here, really, but he's just not that guy. And you can count those guys on one hand, probably, in the history of the NBA. The three that jump to my mind right now, Curry, Russell, who Ray mentioned, and Tim Duncan. But it takes a special kind of selfless leader to create that kind of team environment.
May I submit one more thing? And it's definitely the most pedestrian submission as we're making arguments of who belongs in what category and whatnot. This is not academic, and this is not statistically driven. This is artistically driven. Since I've been covering sports in the Bay Area since October of 2005, the single most watchable athlete, because he stood out like a sore thumb amongst not just the peers on his own team, but the peers of his entire sport, was Tim Lincecum. I thought that Tim Lincecum was the singular greatest watch I've been able to cover. And maybe it was only because you only got him every fifth day, so you really appreciated it when it came around again. Until we got to Steph Curry. Steph Curry is the, in terms of watchability, he's the only one that I would put on the level of Lincecum since I've been here. Now, obviously, it was impossible to take your eyes off of Barry Bonds, but Barry Bonds was here before I got here. Since I got here, in terms of someone who started since after my broadcasting career, Lincecum was the greatest conversational gift I had been handed in terms of, God, I just love watching this guy do what he does. And then it was really Steph Curry. I don't know if anyone has ever been more just magnetic to my eyeballs. Maybe it's different for you, but to me, there was nothing better.
And well, here's the thing. That's the majority opinion worldwide. Right? I mean, that.
Right, I can get a lot of people to join me on that mountain, maybe.
Exactly. Like, and plenty of people may have their favorite who they like to watch more or what have you. You know, I'm a Clay guy, the Marquise Chris guy, if you will. But almost everybody agrees, with the exception of a couple real obnoxious iconoclasts, almost everyone agrees watching Steph Curry is great.
By the way, extra points for iconoclast. Great word that we don't use enough. We got it. Here we are.
It's time.
It's 3:30. It's officially time. We were stalling. We were waiting. I see. It's 3:30, which means it's officially time to reveal to you number 7 on, voted by you, the listeners, the all-time top 10 Bay Area athletes. At number 10, Madison Bumgarner. At number 9, Steve Young. At number 8, Ronnie Lott. And at number 7, here he is.
It's time for the Bay Area Top 10 Athletes of All Time. Number 7, Rick Barry.
3 seconds to go. It is Barry. He must fire. He does! Rick Barry has not missed a free throw against Washington.
Another facet of Rick Barry's play that a lot of people aren't aware of. He was the number one player in the NBA in steals this year. Barry way outside again. And again, Barry drills it. Two 25-foot shots here in the second quarter.
Barry's got it. The ball game is over. The ball game is over. Rick Barry in possession of the ball. At the 30-second tip-top. And now the Golden State Warriors are champions of the world. They are the unbelievable champions of the world.
Richard Francis Dennis Barry the Third, number 7. On the it's a mouthful, right?
It really is. I did just not go know
ahead and,
that.
Yeah, just go ahead and call me Rick. Richard Francis Dennis Barry the Third is coming in at number 7. Rick Barry, he is the only player, and he will forever be the only player to lead the NCAA, the ABA, and the NBA in scoring for an individual season. We'll never see an ABA again, so that record is officially untouchable for anyone who might try to get it. Maybe college, maybe NBA, but you're never going to see all three again. Rick Barry was among...
You'll probably never see a guy shoot free throws underhanded again.
Yeah, no, you're right. Guys are their egos won't let them do it. Rick Barry is someone who is part of the NBA's all-time top 50 players list. I have always had a ton of respect for Rick. I've had conversations with Rick that have changed the way I've thought about basketball, its history, and as it relates. And by the way, we're going to have a conversation with Rick Barry in about an hour from now. He's going to join us at 4:30 today. Jim Barnett's going to come up at 4:15. We're going to ask him about Rick Barry and a little Golden State Warriors, too. Look, this was before me. This was before Matt. Ray Ratto, I don't know if we've ever needed you as much as we need you right now in terms of framing Rick Barry historically in terms of great players that you watched and covered. If we were having an all-time Bay Area stubborn list, he'd probably be higher. He comes in at number 7.
No, there have been guys who've been every bit as stubborn as he has. The difference is he's always been a hard guy to sort of encapsulate. I mean, Barry Bonds is way more stubborn than Rick Barry. Trust me on this. And, you know, you were around at least for some of it, at least watching it from afar. But there have been other guys who have been exactly that. Barry was a guy who, as a rookie, he was a guy who I thought, you know, was trying to figure out what his place in the league was. By his second year, he knew exactly what his place in the league was, because all of a sudden he was the highest volume shooter. He was the guy who had the ball in his hands more than anybody else on a team that went to the NBA Finals. And then just as he's starting to emerge, I think, as a national force in basketball, he can't play the next year because he wants to jump to the ABA and play for his father-in-law. And the Warriors had the rights to him.
That's pretty stubborn.
For a year.
That's pretty damn stubborn.
Yeah. It is pretty, yeah. But, I mean, Bonds was never confronted with that. But Anyway, so he sits out a year. Then he goes to Oakland, where that team wins a championship and then moves to the East. So he never really got a chance to establish roots. And even when he came back to Oakland and they won the title in 75 with him as the centerpiece, there was always this sense that he might be on the way again. He never got to enjoy the things that, for example, Bonds did get to enjoy, which is got to play in a city for a long time and really become that guy. And I think that sort of hurt him in people's minds because they don't really think about him probably as much as they should. But he was an extraordinary basketball player. And it wasn't the underhand free throws. He was a high-volume shooter who should have been a high-volume shooter. He was, in many ways, a faster and more entertaining version of James Harden.
He did it all without the three-point line. Did it all without the three-point line. Didn't get to take one three in his entire career.
Well, except in the...
That's not true. In the ABA.
In the three-point line that matters. Okay. In the league that matters. God bless the ABA. We ain't talking. Rick ain't on this list because of a singular ABA accomplishment. The point of him leading the league and scoring 1 year is very interesting. But it is what he did in the NBA that put him on this list. It's what he did in the NBA that put him on the greatest 50 players of all time list. I mean, he was, if you look at his NBA career, the man. Career averages, he was 25-7-5. 25-7-5. That is an all-court player. That is a man who does it all. How good of a passer, Ray, was Rick Barry? The original point forward?
No, because his assist totals didn't become sort of, hey, that's a lot, until he came back to Golden State the second time. The first time, he was the guy who had to shoot. And in his time in the NBA, or in the ABA, he really only cracked 5 assists a game once. But once he came back to Golden State, he was 4-9, 6-1, 6-2, 6-1, 6-0, 5-4, 6-3. He was a better volume passer. I mean, he was always a great passer, but his first couple of years with the Warriors, when he passed, he was passing to somebody good a shooter or scorer as he was. So it was not always the highest percentage play.
By the way, I was wrong. He did take an NBA three. In 1979-80, his year 35 season, he is wrapping things up in Houston, and he goes
221
ahead.
221
threes in his last year. So he saw a line, and he said, I'm going to go ahead and shoot it. He was a 33% shooter, which at the time was ripping it, I'm sure. This man dropped 35.6 points per game in the 66-67 season. 35 a night. I mean, that's more than volume shooter. Stone cold killer.
I almost think what's more impressive is his age 30 season. That, like Ray said, when he's back with the Warriors, I believe that's the title season, 74-75. 30 points, 6.2 assists, 5.7 rebounds, 46% from the field, 90% from the line, and 3 steals a night.
Ray, where would you put the Warriors' sweep of the Washington Bullets in terms of historical NBA Finals upsets?
I think with hindsight, it's not as high, because when you sweep a team, that's more an example of people not paying attention than it is them playing a blatantly superior team and just handling them. But at the time, it was a huge surprise, because the Warriors hadn't won anything since, I want to say, the 40s. And the other two times they had gotten to the finals, they'd lost to the Celtics and then the 76ers. So 75, I don't know that outside the area people had paid much attention to Golden State. There wasn't a national TV contract at the time. You didn't get to see the Warriors very much if you were on the East Coast. And nobody was, you know, staying up till 1 o'clock to try to figure out a way to get a satellite feed, because there weren't satellites then. So they were more a mystery than they were than they were a surprise. I think people out here knew how good they were. People back east didn't, because, like I said, they never got to see any of those teams, and they were all used to watching the Lakers, and it was one of those years when the Lakers didn't matter.
What was the bigger upset? The Warriors over the Bullets in 75, or the Pistons sweeping the Lakers, Kobe and Shaq?
Oh, the Pistons sweeping the Lakers. I think that was a bigger upset, because that Pistons team's best player was Joe Dumars. And nobody gave the Pistons
wait,
any
no,
shot.
That's not,
no, 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 that's Chauncey.
No, no, which you're, one? Wait a minute, am I getting confused?
Yeah, you're getting the Pistons team that I'm talking about was the Chauncey Billups, Ben Wallace Pistons. Rasheed Wallace.
Okay, you're right, yeah. Yeah, I think most people believe, now that I'm looking at it, most people believe that might have been the least talented champion of the modern basketball era. Not because of anything other than, other than Dumars, they had a Hall of Famer or anybody who was ever considered one. And usually championship teams have at least two.
Yeah, I think Dumars was maybe
Yes, he was.
And it was 4-1, not a sweep.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But I mean,
getting that right, even though the guys in my ear had it wrong as well.
Well, that's why we should never listen. I mean, here are their top six players: Ben Wallace, Rip Hamilton, Chauncey Billups, Tayshaun Prince. Nobody else started more than 33 games, so it was basically four men, none of whom you would sit there and design an offense around. Rasheed only played 22 games that year.
Yeah, did you see? He was probably suspended for all of them. But did you see that R.I.P. Hamilton was trending the other day on Twitter, because it was the day that Alexander Hamilton, which is obviously, you know, the big play, everyone. So it was, people were talking Rip Hamilton on Twitter, and everyone's like, "Oh no, Rip Hamilton's dead!" Or, you know, like, no, everyone, calm down. It was Alexander Hamilton, not Rip Hamilton. We have Jim Barnett joining us, one of our favorites. We haven't said hello to Jim in forever. We're going to talk to him next here on 95.7 The Game. We are brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Jim Barnett, part of the Warriors broadcast team, one of my favorites. Really, seriously, I love talking basketball with this guy, and he's good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Jim Barnett on Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. JB, it's been a long time. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing very well, and I'm enjoying your shows. When you're talking about the top 10 greatest athletes in Bay Area history, it's fun to follow along and see if you got, you know, the same people I do.
Oh, well, thanks very much, man. Checks in the mail. Way to go along with the station, and we do appreciate it.
No, it's really good. It's fun. And of course, everybody's going to have their favorites. And so, you know, we all won't agree on everything.
And, you know, I feel like everyone's going to have the same four or five guys for historical reasons at the front of it. So it's the back half. It's numbers 6 through 10 where a lot of the debate is happening. And coming in today at number 7 is Rick Barry. Now, Ray was around for Rick. Matt nor I were not. So, Jim, if it were up to you to explain to the listeners and the kids who Rick Barry was, not just to the Warriors, but to the league itself, how would you start the story of Rick Barry?
Well, I've got to insert this, because I was listening to him, and Matt Kolsky's talking. He said, "I don't remember anything. I was a little kid in the 90s. So I said, "Oh, my gosh, and we got to talk to him about Rick Barry back in the 70s, in the late 60s. But, you know, not only is Rick Barry one of the top 10 players in Bay Area history, I have a list that I've kept the top 10 NBA players in history. Now, I haven't revised it in the last 5 or 6 years, but Rick was always on that. I don't count current players, so I'm not counting LeBron James. I'm not counting players who are in the league today. But he is definitely, to me, one of the top 15 players in the entire – I know he's in the top 50. We already know that. He's already earned that honor. But I think he has to be on the top – he could be on the top 10, but he's definitely one of the top 15 players in the history of the NBA because he had no weaknesses. He did everything well. Yes, he was a terrific scorer. I mean, and he was a better scorer than he was a shooter. You know, he couldn't shoot the ball like Steph Curry. He could get hot and do that, but he was a very good shooter, but he's a prolific scorer, but he could rebound the ball. He could pass the ball. He was a great passer. And by the way, they didn't keep blocks or steals in the NBA until the 73-74 season. And I may be wrong in this, but it wouldn't surprise me if Rick didn't was maybe the first steals leader in the NBA. I bet he led the league in steals that year. And that was my last year with the Warriors. It was my third and last year. I played with him for 2 years, you know, the 72-73 and the 73-74 seasons. But he had no weaknesses. But I love Ray Ratto, but Ray, you can't compare him to the guy in Houston because Rick Barry played defense. He really was. Not only did he steal the ball, but they kept blocked shots. You know, they if the guy's going up for a shot and Rick would sometimes take it right out of his hand, that is a blocked shot. But they didn't keep that stat until later in his career. But, you know, Harden's a prolific scorer, no question about it. You know, averaging 36, 37 a game. But he waves at people defensively. So I just can't put him in the same category there. Because Rick worked at defense, and he was something else. I love playing with him, I have to tell you, because I go back door, and that ball was, you know, I break past my man, go back door. He'd hit me with a pass. I don't even have to dribble it. It's right in front of the basket. I lay it in.
Well, I wasn't comparing him defensively to Harden because Harden basically is a chair. But in terms of being the guy who dictated the entire offense, in those two years when he got to the finals in 67 and 75, the ball was in his hands a lot more than it was in anybody else's by necessity. And that's what I mean by that, is that Houston stops completely when Harden has the ball. But when he doesn't have the ball, the shambolic chaos that it results means that Houston is better off with Harden having the ball. And in some ways, especially in 67, I thought, if Barry didn't have the ball, the Warriors weren't very functional. And his first year he did not lead the league in steals, by the way.
The second year.
It was his second year. The first year was Larry Steele. No pun intended.
Okay, up in Portland. Okay, good. Well, you know, you've already, and I was listening to you as I was coming back from my bike ride. I had my bike in my car by that time. And, you know, about his rookie year when he averaged 25-7. He was all-NBA first team. He was rookie of the year. And he did that. And Wilt Chamberlain, at least for the first half of the year, averaged 39 points a game. And Rick threw in 25.7 with Chamberlain on the team until they traded Wilt, 38 games into the season. And then, of course, the next year, as you said, he led the league in scoring at 35-6. Fortunately, he made that decision because it really hurt his career in so many ways going to the ABA. And, of course, he wanted to play for his father-in-law. And so, then he finally came back. And when he came back, that was 72-73, and that was my second year with the Warriors. And he was you're right, Ray. He handled the ball. And I was playing in New York by the time the Warriors won that championship. But I came back, you know, for the playoffs, and we were eliminated in the first round. And, you know, I watched all the finals games. I went to the games during those years. And not only did Rick have the ball in his hands, he did a lot of the coaching. He did a lot of the coaching on the floor. We know that. But even at timeouts, he probably spoke even more than Al Attles. And that's not, you know, any detriment to Al Attles. But Rick was very, very, Rick, he's strong-willed. He's got strong opinions, and it's hard to move him. And so sometimes that's, you know, socially that's been his downfall, to be a little strong-minded and opinionated about things. But I'll tell you what, he knew basketball. He knew how to play. I've never played with a smarter player. And if you were open, you got the ball.
I want to dig in a little more on that, the personality stuff, Jim, because we hear a lot about it. But what was it like being in a locker room where Rick Barry was the central figure?
everyone deferred to him. Nate Thurman, everyone. And then when he spoke, Al Attles did too. Not because Al was weak. He wasn't. When Al started speaking loudly, we all shivered because his voice was booming in there, and it would hit a nerve in your body, and you didn't move. You wouldn't say a thing. You hardly didn't want to hear yourself breathing. But, you know, he had great admiration and trust in Rick Barry. Al Attles did, and everyone did, because dadgummit, he was right. He was always right about things. He knew what was going on. He was very intellectual. He's a very smart individual. He's got a very high IQ, and his basketball IQ is even better. He just sees everything on the floor, and that's why you defer to him. And you know, you play your own game, but once in a while, you know, I'm a little emotional, and he and I would yell at each other on the floor a couple of times. You know, he'd get mad at me, and I'd, you know, say something back at him, but it didn't carry over into the play at all. Now, Nate Thurman was the way Nate was. He was just a quiet man and a gentle giant by nature. I don't ever recall them getting into anything at all. But, you know, and I never recall Rick Barry getting into any fights in practice or anything like that. But he was a very strong-willed person, and he was going to speak his piece. He was going to let you know what he thought about any situation.
Jim Barnett joining us on 95.7 The Game. Rick Barry coming in at number 7 on our all-time Bay Area athlete list. A little walk down memory lane. Let me ask you about this season of Warriors basketball, which was clearly a very difficult season to get through. We didn't even get all the way through it. And what a shame. Not the way anyone wanted to see Chase Center open, but what's done is done. Jim, what, if anything, did we learn about the Golden State Warriors this year?
Well, you try to figure out who's going to be a player for them in the future. And everyone's talking about Eric Paschal, that he's going to be a rotation player for him. We don't know all what's going to happen. I think it's I'm glad that they got and made the trade and got Anthony Wiggins, because I think he's going to flourish in this system, because people are going to forget about him when you're playing Stephen Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson out there on the floor. He's going to get a lot of wide open shots and a lot of lanes to the basket, because I think he's a better driver than he is an outside shooter. And so those are things that I looked at. It remains to be seen who else is going to emerge from that group, including their number one draft pick of last year. I thought he got better at the end, and that was good. But it's a crapshoot there, and everything right. All we're doing is we're betting on the thing that everything's going to be okay in Orlando, and everything's going to be okay with the season. I've never seen anything like this in the sports world that this coronavirus has hit us with, and everybody just kind of holds their breath, and new news comes out every day. So I hope they finish the season in Orlando and there's a defining champion. And I hope the team that wins is playing against a team in the finals that everyone is healthy, so that it's not, you know, an asterisk next to the champion that they crown. And then the Warriors, you know, it's going to be a tough league next year for them, but they're still going to be a great team, and I'm very optimistic about what their chances are if everyone can stay healthy.
Get in there, Ray.
I thought we were doing a station ID.
I'll do it after. I got like 2 minutes of wiggle room, and I would hate to have Jim sit through your top of the hour station identification. That's too much of a burden for any guest to bear.
Game.
Yeah. Oh, do it. So do, oh, go ahead.
We're
Wait.
Good.
Jim's going to do it for us. Jim, settle it.
Thanks for tuning in to 95.7.
Good enough.
Game.
Even went a little Gianna on the game.
What? How optimistic are you? Not that this season will get in, but that next season will start before the first of the year.
You're talking about the upcoming...
Not the current playoff season.
Yeah. Well, we're supposed to start December 1st.
The start of the next full season. Do you think start in this calendar year?
It all depends on Orlando And of course, you're asking me to be Dr. Fauci, and I'm not Dr. Fauci. And all the CDC and everything, it's a World Health Organization. I don't know. My guess is as good as yours. I'm hoping they will. That's what we go on. We go on faith. We do a lot of things. I went riding my bike today. Every day, every time I go out, I have faith that no car is going to hit me from behind and, you know, put me in the hospital or in the morgue, even worse. We go on faith. I'm hoping, I don't think they'll get a vaccine by the first of the year. I think that's, you know, fool's gold. It usually takes longer for something like that. I'm hoping that we can get ahead of this, but we've got to shut down. Now we're getting into how I feel about it. We just need to shut it back down again because, you know, the curve has gone up and it's very dangerous. It's just hard to believe at my age to see all this happening right now.
It is an unbelievable moment in time. And let me just tell you, Jim, hearing your voice is the closest we've been to the NBA in a long time. It was great catching up with you. Thanks for putting Rick Barry into some historical context for us. Stay safe and sound. We need you as long as we can. Look out for COVID and look out for all of those cars behind you while you're on your bike.
Hey, listen, I love your show every day. Really, I do. You guys do a hell of a job.
Thank you so much. That's quite an endorsement from one of the best, Jim Barnett here on 95.7 The Game. We thank him very much. And just so we don't get in trouble with the FCC, here is the official station identification. Welcome to your 4 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.